Welcome to the Intelligence Hour, 58 minutes of cutting-edge analysis and exposé on the unconstitutional actions of government, discussion of the massive system of government secrecy that I refer to as the shadow government, and analysis of current events in government and intelligence in light of constitutional law and the Bill of Rights. I'm your humble host, Kevin Shipp, former CIA counterintelligence officer, counterterrorism officer, protective officer on the director of the CIA, internal security investigator, polygraph examiner, expert in the detection of deception, and a program manager for the Department of State Anti-Terrorism Assistance Police Training Program. I am the author of From the Company of Shadows, an expose on CIA operations, terrorism, and the CIA's abuse of power. I'm coming to you today, to you today from a discreet, secure facility somewhere deep in the southern United States. Let's continue. I like to put it this way. I'm a recovering CIA officer. I go to weekly meetings of CIA Anonymous. But the thing about CIA Anonymous is it's a 24-step program instead of a 12-step program. The first 12 steps teach us how to start telling the truth again. I'm just kidding. Well, maybe. On this show, I'll be keeping an eye on the government, a constitutional necessity, as we've all learned the hard way. I'll be having well-known guests on the show to discuss cases of government corruption, cover-up, and illegal activity. Next week, I'll have Admiral James Lyons on, former commander of the Pacific Fleet, to talk about the cover-up and the framing of Admiral Kimmel in the Pearl Harbor attack. This kind of scrutiny of the U.S. government is an important constitutional responsibility for we the people. That's how our government should function. On this program, I'll be covering these issues as objectively as possible. For each current event, like the one we'll talk about today, there is a Republican version and a Democrat version. There's a liberal version and a conservative version. There's a U.S. version and the version of an allied or opposing country. Usually, the bias of these versions causes factual accounts to be molded to that narrative. The American people need the truth. This is a government by the people, after all, without influence from political parties or the government. Let me welcome you to the second edition of the Intelligence Hour. We'll be discussing current events and analyzing actions of government that drift from the Constitution and in some cases have separated from it entirely. It's sad to say that I think essentially we're living in a post-constitutional government. It is critical to remember the U.S. Constitution is not just a piece of philosophy or a pleasant ideology. It is the supreme law of the land, which supersedes the entire U.S. criminal justice system. To violate the U.S. Constitution is a felony. And yet, government officials with impunity do it routinely, lying under oath, issuing executive orders that violate U.S. law, engaging in covert operations behind the back of the U.S. Congress, which are the representatives of we the people, manipulating the economy so most Americans live like serfs under wealthy rulers, and behind the scenes, a vast empire of secrecy exists, hidden from the people by its own definition of national security, which is the security of its own survival and expansion. This empire of secrecy mocks congressional oversight. It conceals information from legislatures and seals cases that demand its accountability using the power of a monarchy. Essentially, that is the case with the use of the state's secrets privilege. What is the shadow government? Some call it the deep state. But the deep state concept, as important as that is, does not go far enough into the dark world of secrecy that is the sword and the shield of the shadow government. That part of government that has shielded itself from constitutional and international law. The Department of State secretly running guns to Islamic jihadists in Libya using Saudi Arabia and Qatar as front organizations or front states is a prime example. This operation led to the terrorist attack on Benghazi, the Benghazi special mission compound, and the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other heroic Americans. Many of these weapons, tanks, U.S.-trained jihadi fighters have wound up with al-Qaeda and in the hands of ISIS. This covert program, done without the knowledge of Congress or the American people and in violation of international law, is a prime example of the shadow government. The shadow government has conducted multiple operations like this in the past, from training the Afghan Mujahideen, which became al-Qaeda, to working with drug lords in Central America. These operations became dismal and deadly failures, but the shadow government never seems to learn. And that bait may be because it doesn't want to learn. It only perpetuates itself, grows its massive secret budgets, constantly develops expensive and lucrative arms, and foments conflict around the world as a way of doing business. To this shadow government, human life, the lives of U.S. troops and foreign citizens, is cheap. Six-figure incomes are the badge of government and corporate success, and manipulating Congress and the democratic process, the means of gratification, greed, and power in this system. The shadow government is not some crazy conspiracy theory involving a small secret cabal of men and women meeting in a smoke-filled room deep in a government building under Washington, D.C. I call it the shadow government because of its regular constitutional violations, manipulation of the U.S. economy, influence on the U.S. press, and vast system of surveillance, which are all done in secret, in the shadows. It is secrecy that allows the shadow government to operate in its massive capacity. This mammoth system of secrecy, not to be confused with the necessary and proper use of secrecy in a constitutional government, is not only a shield, but it is a sword. And all of this started out good back in 1948, at least that was the plan, but it went horribly wrong and has taken on a power of its own, even to the extent of controlling our government, corporations, and the economy, all while the American people are left literally in the dark. It is a massive complex, a network of interconnecting nodes, a self-perpetuating monster that is almost unstoppable. Its central nodes are the secret intelligence agencies, the CIA and the NSA. These nodes operate with colossal secret budgets. Through billions in alluring secret contracts, the nodes capture huge swaths of American industry and even Silicon Valley. Because the entities captured by these huge monetary agreements are bound by CIA and NSA secrecy oaths, they also become connected nodes to the shadow government. IT companies in Silicon Valley have signed multi-million dollar contracts and are now blissfully under its influence. For example, Amazon, the owner of the Washington Post, has signed a $600 million contract with the CIA. In parallel connection to the CIA NSA node is what was called by President Dwight D. Eisenhower the military-industrial complex. This complex is tied to the intelligence nodes as well as many times controlled by them. The allure of billions of dollars in corporate contracts and earnings and the glue of secrecy drive these large U.S. corporations to perpetual war, conflict, and nation building. These are essential to their corporate survival and their balance sheet. And that's how they're manipulated. And let me stop here for a moment and just remind you all that during this program, you can send me an email at intelligencehour@gmail.com. That's intelligencehour@gmail.com. Send in your questions, your comments, and any suggestions that you have. I'll read them all before next week's program. Your input is very important to me. You're the most important part of this program, and you really are the true hope for preservation of this constitutional government. And that's what this program is all about. On this broadcast, we'll engage in real analysis of issues involving the federal government, the intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, the Federal Reserve, Wall Street, the corporate military complex, and foreign operations abroad. And my goal is real analysis. Real analysis will examine all the facts like a good criminal investigation, with no preconceived conclusion, no bias, and no psychological block or denial. Real analysis will not follow the establishment mantra without checking it out. Real analysis is courageous and not daunted by personal attacks or fear of ridicule. Real analysis is always ready to accept the fact that its conclusions could be wrong. Real analysis is aware of its own biases. And real analysis examines all possible evidence with no prejudice. The central mission of the Intelligence Hour is to reveal the unconstitutional side of government, which is critical, especially now. It has been dramatically increasing over the last 60 years, As I've mentioned, I call this the shadow government for the reasons that I've just explained. This system has been manipulated, and has overridden Congress on multiple occasions using secrecy. It's taken government away from the people, put it in the hands of secret intelligence and secret organizations. It encourages lying, greed, and fraud. It causes the people to fear it instead of honor it. It keeps people in constant debt while it showers billions on itself in secret budgets and contracts, making its CEOs and former government officials rich. That's the revolving door in Washington. It starts wars and conflicts based on well-crafted and publicized lies. It has deceived and manipulated the national news media. It has little regard for human life, has killed thousands in secret operations, the quest for oil and natural resources, regime change in its own image, and what it calls collateral damage, the killing of innocent foreign civilians. It uses drones as judge, executioner, and jury. It fabricates its own enemies or boogeymen to lure the American people into accepting expensive and deadly wars. It silences patriotic men and women in the military, intelligence, and government. It rewards greed and narcissism and punishes faith and honesty. It has an insatiable craving for money made by selling arms, missiles, tanks, training rebels, and building surveillance satellites. It has created a false definition of national security to serve itself. It spies on and monitors every move of its own people. It covers its own mistakes and illegal actions with unchallenged secrecy. It conceals its use of billions of tax dollars with no accountability. It has created a system called the state's secret privilege to silence scrutiny of its secret operations and seal all of the information from Congress. It places innocent Americans in jail if they have the nerve to resist it. This system is the shadow government. It's taken control of the U.S. Congress through secrecy, greed, lobbying, intimidation, and, in several cases, blackmail. It forces itself on other sovereign nations, starting covert wars, stirring up revolts, instigating unrest, and fighting to expand its control over the world. It snuffs out its primary threat, the only thing that gives people the resolve to resist it, and that is faith in a creator, the foundation of the Constitution. It's developed a climate of fear, its greatest weapon, among its people. And it has slowly eroded the very Constitution that made America the greatest nation in the world. The shadow government has manipulated presidents from Eisenhower to Clinton to Bush to Obama, and we can be sure it will attempt to manipulate Donald Trump if it has not done so already. The shadow government thrives on government and political espionage. That is its soul. That is its character. The world of foreign espionage is a dark underworld, a vast network of opposing entities dancing a deadly dance, nation against nation, intelligence machine against intelligence machine, agent against agent. Billions of secret dollars flow under the surface, back and forth across the world's networks, with thousands of front businesses, smiling businessmen and diplomats, thousands of agents in the costume of their opponent. Like predators, they search for weakness in their prey, gullibility, loneliness, or lust. When they find it, they attach themselves like a parasite and drain the life out of the victim, all the while making them think they are their closest confidant. Political espionage is the twin sister of foreign espionage. She's no less cunning, no less calculating, no less ruthless, and no less deadly. She wears a torn and soiled garment she calls democracy and wears a serpent-like smile of deception. Her only loyalty is to money and thirst, and power is her religion. These two sisters have a second-class sibling. Her name is patriotism. Her language is honor, character, and devotion. She wears a clean, fragrant garment she calls the Constitution, her most precious possession. Because of her simple devotion, she is easily deceived by her other two sisters. She thinks everyone is honest, loves their country before themselves, and would never hurt anyone who is family. Because she's so trusting, she is used over and over by her other sisters, never realizing that her friendship with them is her undoing. Tonight, we're going to be discussing what is called Russiagate and the NSA surveillance of Donald Trump and his campaign staff, including after he was president. We will not examine this from a Democratic side or a Republican side. We will examine it just based on the information that has come in as we know it. Welcome to the world of foreign and domestic espionage. Welcome to the world of political espionage. The allegations by the Democratic Party are that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians to win the election. The allegations by the Republican Party are that Obama plants are located in what they call the deep state and have illegally spied on Donald Trump and his staff. In reality, this is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is a constitutional issue. And we need to understand that NSA surveillance of congressmen and senators went on well before the Russiagators or the surveillance that has come out about Donald Trump. Let me read you an article in the National Review. This article talks about the NSA surveillance of congressmen and senators well before the so-called Russia scandal came out. National Review, written by Andrew McCarthy, April 18, 2017, says this. In 2011, Dennis Kucinich was still a Democratic congressman from Ohio, but he was not working in lockstep with President Obama, at least not on Libya. True to his anti-war leanings, Kucinich was a staunch opponent of Obama's unauthorized war against the Gaddafi regime. Kucinich's very public efforts, including trying to broker negotiations between the administration and the Gaddafi regime, to whom the White House was turning a deaf ear. It was in that context that he took a call in his Washington office from Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, which was Muammar Gaddafi's trusted son. And as it turns out, he was under surveillance by the NSA the entire time. The NSA was monitoring his phone calls and his discussions on this very important issue, and they were recording and saving his phone calls. That is chilling. Four years later, as he recalled in a recent opinion piece, Kucinich learned that the call had been recorded and leaked to the Washington Times. So not only had the government recorded the conversation, unmasked his name, which is illegal, they leaked it to the Washington Times. Kucinich believes the monitoring of his communication and the subsequent leak are the work of American intelligence agents. That is critical. Now, I want you to understand that because I want us all to realize that this massive NSA surveillance program, the CIA's use of this program, and even the Department of Justice's use of this program has been around a long time before the recent allegations of surveillance of Donald Trump. Regarding the revelations that we have seen so far and what has come out, this is what has happened to date. A dossier written by a former British intelligence officer and paid for by some mysterious party in the opposition to Trump, Democratic Party, was disseminated to a U.S. government official. The dossier was taken to the FBI and the CIA by none other than Senator John McCain. And we've seen the senator taking secret trips to Syria. He was in Iraq, of course. He's been to Ukraine before the revolt, and on and on and on it goes. CIA Director John Brennan allegedly leaked the context of the dossier to the press, which published it immediately without verifying it, which became an embarrassment to some. Several portions of this dossier, which was poorly written and full of errors, I've read it, have been proven to be erroneous based on an unnamed source's information who got it from another unnamed source. Let's look at a Washington Times article on Christopher Steele, the British intelligence agent, and this so-called dossier. We'll go to article number two. And stand by. An anti-Trump, this goes on, Washington Times, Monday, April 24, 2017, by Rowan Scarborough. An anti-Trump dossier created by former British spy and financed by the Democratic-linked money has significant detractors, the people accused of crimes in a supposed Trump-Russia conspiracy. Three men, Mr. Trump's attorney, a campaign volunteer, and a tech company CEO have publicly said that the parts about them and the dossier are fiction. A fourth figure, a Russian diplomat who Londoner Christopher Steele accused of lawbreaking, said via Russia's foreign ministry that the dossier is a fantasy, and there is no evidence to back him up. The 35-page dossier by Mr. Steele has taken on critical importance in recent weeks for Democrats in Washington. They cite its accusations without corroboration as the reason for a special commission to investigate Mr. Trump and his aides for a supposed role in Russia's hacking of the Democratic Party email servers. Now, we know that a British diplomat has come out and stated that he actually received that information in person and turned it over. It was not from a hack. So let's move on. Lost in the Democrats' endorsements are the people who say Mr. Steele's supposed chronicle of meetings and misdeeds is untrue. McClatchy News reported that the man Mr. Steele identified as spearheading part of the hacking operation was, and still is, in a Russia prison, and at the time with no access to the internet or a cell phone. Let's go on. This has come out and is controversial and very interesting. In addition, members of the allied, what's called the Five Eyes intelligence agencies, who just are meeting in New Zealand as we speak, most notably the British GCHQ, which is the British equivalent of the NSA, allegedly contact U.S. intelligence and advised that its surveillance of a Russian agent had records of some Trump campaign staff communicating with this Russian agent that it had under surveillance. Fox News analyst, libertarian, and constitutional scholar Judge Andrew Napolitano was fired from Fox News for making this announcement. Now it looks like the judge may have been right the entire time. We're going to go to an article by Zero Hedge talking about the Five Eyes, and we'll cover this article just briefly. The article states, essentially, starts out like this. This is by Zero Hedge, authored by Wayne Madsen via Strategic Cultural Foundation. In a rare public could you get that switch for me? Yeah, good. Thank you. A little technical difficulty. Let's move on. In a rare public announcement, Britain's Signals Intelligence Agency, the government communications headquarters of GCHQ, issued a rare public statement concerning a change by an American former judge that it conducted electronic surveillance of President-elect Donald Trump. Now, GCHQ has come out and staunchly denied that. Such spying took place against two British cabinet members in 1983 by Canada's SIGINT agency. It is known that these Five Eyes intelligence agencies release information to each other, many times not bound by their own constitution or actions of parliament. In this case, the former Canadian Communications Security Establishment, now known as Communications Security Establishment of Canada, or CSEC, Officer Mike Frost said that Margaret Thatcher used the five-power global surveillance network to spy on two of her cabinet members because she did not believe they were loyal in supporting her policies. This five-eyes surveillance has been used by the coordinating countries several times. In 1998, it was revealed by Margaret Neusham, a former Lockheed contractor for the National Security Agency, that GCHQ and NSA were involved in warrantless surveillance of U.S. Senator Strom Thurmond's overseas phone calls. That was GCHQ coordinating with the NSA on a U.S. senator. In the early 1970s, NSA and GCHQ reportedly cooperated in conducting warrantless eavesdropping on the communications in New York City of Beatles singer John Lennon. So we can see that there's a pattern here that the GCHQ has indeed worked with the NSA to spy on U.S. citizens, including office holders in Congress. All right, let's move on. It appears that the FBI used the dossier and the information from British GCHQ to request a FISA warrant, and we'll talk in detail about FISA warrants in another program, but to produce a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act or FISA warrant for NSA surveillance of members of the Trump campaign staff, specifically Carter Page, who was only a member of the campaign team for a short period of time. Page allegedly had business meetings with individuals who turned out to be Russian intelligence agents, certainly not a rarity in international business. The Chinese do it, Israel does it, France does it, and we do it. International business is rife with intelligence agents. So far, none of the documents Page shared with his Russian business counterparts have been proven to be sensitive, but the investigation continues. After initially saying it wasn't true, whether that was a lie or something else, under pressure and in an unprecedented move, FBI Director James Comey made the announcement that the FBI was investigating possible collusion with members of the Trump campaign team with Russian agents. To date, no direct evidence has emerged that this is the case, but the investigation continues. Let's go to clip one of James Comey testifying.
As you know, our practice is not to confirm the existence of ongoing investigations, especially those investigations that involve classified matters. But in unusual circumstances, where it is in the public interest, it may be appropriate to do so, as Justice Department policies recognize. This is one of those circumstances. I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining. At the request of congressional leaders, we have taken the extraordinary step, in coordination with the Department of Justice, of briefing this Congress's leaders, including the leaders of this committee, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking on that button down here, and click on any of the videos over here to watch the latest interviews, show highlights, and digital exclusives. Thanks for watching.
To date, no evidence has emerged that Page knowingly met with Russian intelligence agents and passed sensitive information. In reality, Page had worked with the FBI previously to help them nab a Russian agent operating legally in the U.S. This was Carter Page's response during an interview with CNN. Let's go to clip number two.
Information about the biggest story of the past year, Russia's presumed meddling in the U.S. presidential election and its relationship to Donald Trump's campaign. CNN is exclusively reporting that the FBI gathered intelligence last summer suggesting that Russian operatives tried to use Trump advisors, including Carter Page, to infiltrate the Trump campaign. This, according to U.S. officials who made clear they don't know whether Page was aware that the Russians may have been using him. Because of how Russian spy services operate, Page could have unknowingly talked with Russian agents. Page has repeatedly denied any impropriety. He's a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and worked as an investment banker in New York, London, and Moscow. He was also an advisor to the Russian energy giant Gazprom and joins me now. Thanks so much for being here. Do you care whether Russians helped elect Donald Trump?
Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, acting with a seat in the Intelligence Committee, who has seen records of the NSA surveillance, made the following statements, keeping in mind that he is a Democrat. Let's go to clip number three.
And the big issue, of course, is whether or not there was collusion among members of the Trump campaign or surrounding the Trump campaign, Trump advisors. Can you say definitively that there was collusion? There were people affiliated with the Trump campaign who were working with Russians to time the release of damaging information about Hillary Clinton that had been hacked either from John Podesta or the DNC?
I don't think we can say anything definitively at this point. We are still at the very early stage of the investigation. The only thing I can say is that it would be irresponsible for us not to get to the bottom of this. We really need to find out exactly what the Russians did, because one of the most important conclusions that the intelligence community reached is that they are going to do this again to the United States. They're doing it already in Europe. So we can say, you know, conclusively, this is something that needs to be thoroughly investigated, but it's way premature to be reaching conclusions.
Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, we thank you for your time today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Jay.
Now, it's come out that Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice, in her new position after Benghazi as the National Security advisor to the President of the United States, ordered the NSA to provide her with NSA surveillance records of these Russian businessmen and then unmasked or revealed the names of members of the Trump team and perhaps Trump himself. It is also alleged that Rice requested an extensive spreadsheet of the identities of the Trump and his staff by name or unmasked. That is significant. In these investigations, as a counterintelligence investigator, I can tell you this, one thing I learned. There's only one thing that's predictable about a counterintelligence investigation, and that's that they are unpredictable. They can take a turn any moment in a direction that you did not predict. Initially, During an interview, Susan Rice denied the allegations that she had been reviewing NSA surveillance of Donald Trump. Let's go to clip number four.
We spoke earlier this evening with former Obama White House National Security Advisor Susan Rice, the author of that piece. It was her first interview since leaving the White House. I began by asking about the allegations leveled today by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes that Trump transition officials, including the president, may have been swept up in surveillance of foreigners at the end of the Obama administration.
I know nothing about this. I was surprised to see reports from Chairman Nunes on that count today. I mean, let's back up and recall where we have been. The President of the United States accused his predecessor, President Obama, of wiretapping Trump Tower during the campaign. Nothing of the sort occurred, and we've heard that confirmed by the director of the FBI, who also pointed out that no president, no White House, can order the surveillance of another American citizen. That can only come from the Justice Department with the approval of a.
So initially, Susan Rice denied that she was engaged in that activity. Later on, she had to come out and admit that indeed she had. This went to Senator Rand Paul and others who became very concerned, primarily Senator Paul as a constitutionalist, primarily from a constitutional perspective. This is potentially concerning. Let's go real quickly to clip number five with Rand Paul discussing the Susan Rice incident.
Next guest disagrees wholeheartedly. Yeah. Let's bring in member of the Foreign Relations Committee, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Senator Paul, always good to have you on, sir.
Thanks.
You said yesterday this is a smoking gun, the Susan Rice story. You called it an enormous deal. Why do you disagree with Bill Press?
Well, for years, both progressives and libertarians have been complaining about these backdoor searches. It's not that we're searching maybe one foreign leader and who they talk to. We search everything in the whole world. There were reports a couple of years ago that all of Italy's phone calls were absorbed in a one-month period of time. We were getting Merkel's phone calls. We're getting everybody's phone calls. But by rebound, we are collecting millions of Americans' phone calls. If you want to look at an American's phone call or listen to it, you should have to have a warrant, the old-fashioned way, in a real court where both sides get represented. But a secret warrant by a secret court with a lower standard level because we're afraid of terrorism is one thing for foreigners, but both myself and a progressive, Ron Wyden, have been warning about these backdoor searches for years and that they could be politicized. The facts will come out with Susan Rice, but I think she ought to be under subpoena and she should be asked, did you talk to the president about it? Did President Obama know about this? So this is actually eerily similar to what Trump accused them of, which is eavesdropping on conversations for political reasons.
Oh,
so it appears we have a mess on our hands. And I want to stress that this is a constitutional mess. In the midst of all this controversy, many are missing the big picture. And that is the massive system of surveillance that has been in place, most people don't know, even before 9/11. That placed this kind of power in the hands of the NSA and in one person, National Security Advisor Susan Rice. It could have been anyone other than Susan Rice. Some have indicated there is a possibility that Advisor Rice used this for political purposes. That remains to be seen as a result of the coming in or ongoing investigation. What we need to do here is we need to do a little history about the government officials lying about surveilling U.S. citizens, even under oath. If you remember, in a congressional hearing, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper was asked several times if the NSA was surveilling U.S. citizens domestically. And this was his response. Let's go to clip number six.
So what I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently, perhaps, collect, but not wittingly.
Now, it's worth pointing out here that DNI Clapper was under oath when he made that statement. It turned out, obviously, that statement was not true. Some would consider it lying under oath. Is Mr. Clapper, has he been indicted? Has he been held accountable for that? No, of course not. That's how the shadow government works. We see this over and over and over again, lying under oath, engaging in illegal activity with no consequences. Now, CIA Director John Brennan. The CIA, when the U.S. Senate was writing its report on the torture, CIA torture program, which, by the way, did not just involve waterboarding. Some of it was much more serious than that. The CIA actually broke in to Senate computers on Capitol Hill to surveil what the Senate Intelligence Committee was writing in that report. I just want to stress that is a felony. That is the CIA breaking into the Senate, the U.S. government, domestically. Was Mr. Brennan indicted? Was Mr. Brennan put in jail? Was Mr. Brennan even brought before a special commission? No, nothing happened. Let's go to clip number 7 and listen to what Mr. Brennan had to say.
The allegations of, you know, CIA hacking into, you know, Senate computers, nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, we wouldn't do that. I mean, that's just beyond the scope of reason in terms of what we would do. When the facts come out on this, I think a lot of people who are claiming that there has been this tremendous sort of spying and monitoring and hacking will be proved wrong.
Well, CIA Director John Brennan reversed his stance this week after an internal CIA inquiry found the spying indeed took place with the involvement of 10 agency employees. Brennan apologized to lawmakers in a briefing earlier this week. The CIA has also retracted counter-allegations that Senate staffers illegally removed classified information from a top-secret facility. The White House is standing by Brennan, citing President Obama's, quote, great confidence in his leadership. But at least two members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Democrats Mark Udall of Colorado and Martin Heinrich of New Mexico, are calling for Brennan's resignation. Talk about this revelation that you just exposed.
So, after all of this, what had been this behind-the-scenes battle, unprecedented battle between the CIA and its Senate overseers, apparently John Brennan asked his Inspector General, David Buckley, to look into Senator Feinstein's allegations that the CIA had, in fact, without authorization and in breach of an agreement with the Senate staff, had intruded into a database that was for the use by the Senate staff only. Apparently, David Buckley came back with his findings that a number of CIA IT specialists, 3 IT specialists, 5 CIA officers, and I believe it was 2 attorneys, had in fact either without permission breached the Senate committee's database or caused it to be breached. We also find out that the complaint that the CIA referred to the Justice Department containing allegations that the Senate staff had, without permission, without authorization, removed top-secret classified documents from the secret CIA facility in which they were doing their work, was apparently made incorrect information, that it was based, it was not factually based. So that's gone away. But although the CIA, the Justice Department, in fact, had dropped the case beginning of last month, although, very interestingly, the Justice Department said that it had found no reason to proceed with a criminal investigation or insufficient evidence to proceed with a criminal investigation at this time. So it's possible that the Justice Department could take a new look at all of this. We have to wait and see. There have been calls by some members of Congress and civil rights organizations that the Justice Department ought to take a new look at what went on. And, you know, the thing about all of this is that I think President Obama, the White House staff, the CIA, a lot of people on Capitol Hill had hoped to put this issue behind them once the Senate Intelligence Committee's report is issued. And I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon.
What is a concern in all of this is the role that I call the shadow government plays. If we remember the USA Patriot Act, which 70 congressmen and senators signed without even reading it, gave the NSA and the CIA shocking new powers to surveil U.S. citizens. This power included some very dramatic things. And just by way of reminder, the NSA established a massive Utah data center, heavily fortified $2 billion program located in the state of Utah. The NSA surveillance program was a program of immense secrecy. It intercepted, deciphered, analyzed, and stored vast swaths of the world's communications. From secret satellites, it zipped through the underground and undersea cables of international, foreign, and domestic networks. On Americans, it scooped up, vacuumed up our private emails, our cell phone calls, our internet searches. The NSA was collecting 1.7 billion pieces of information on U.S. citizens a day and permanently storing it. This included personal data trails, parking receipts, electronic travel itineraries, bookstore purchases, and other what is called digital pocket litter. The NSA essentially turned its surveillance apparatus on U.S. citizens. And of course, we remember that Edward Snowden came out and revealed that the NSA was tied into several U.S. telecom companies, from Verizon to AT&T, Sprint, Google, Facebook, Apple, and Yahoo. And the NSA had connected directly into the servers of these companies and was downloading communication involving U.S. citizens. In the midst of all of this, a FISA surveillance court judge had just about enough. Judge Stephen Smith came out. Many people did not know this. Judge Stephen Smith came out and blew the whistle. He stated that there were 30,000 secret FISA warrants to spy on U.S. citizens every single year. It was a covert operation that's been going on for decades. It is so secret that not even Congress knows the extent of the FISA court surveillance warrant system. And according to Judge Stephen Smith, the majority of these never go before a judge. When we discuss FISA, I'll discuss how they get around that. Also, personal data trails, as I mentioned, parking receipts, travel itineraries, and the other pocket litter were picked up. Now, let me mention, when this happened, Google came out and made a disclosure that they had 7,969 requests for information by the NSA. That's what Google stated. In reality, the NSA was connected directly into their servers and was downloading all of this information. So just by way of history, this is what the NSA had done. After a firestorm of opposition led by Senator Rand Paul, this provision of the Patriot Act was replaced with what's called the USA Freedom Act, reportedly to cut back the NSA's ability to engage in bulk surveillance. Here is what Senator Ron Paul said about the Freedom Act. Let's go to clip number 8.
He's made 3 runs for the White House, and now his son, U.S. Senator Rand Paul, is aiming for the Oval Office. Ron Paul, former Republican member of the House of Representatives and one-time Libertarian presidential nominee, is my guest on this edition of Politics. Welcome to Politicking. I'm Larry King. He is always outspoken, opinionated, and one of a kind. He's Ron Paul. He joins me from Clute, Texas, former congressman. He's a physician. He's made White House bids twice as a Republican, once in 1998 as the Libertarian Party's nominee. He's the founder of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. He's an outspoken advocate for limited government, personal liberty, and low taxes. And you can catch him as he hosts the Ron Paul Liberty Report. And you've seen ads for a latest thing that he's got about you and your finances and what this country's going to or coming to. We'll get to that in a minute. What are your thoughts about your son's success yesterday in the Senate?
Well, I think it's wonderful because I know how tough a job he has, you know, because it's not nice to be in a place where you really want to get along, but you have to stand your gun and stand your ground, and everybody is yelling and screaming at you. You have to believe in something to do that. Too often people just capitulate and go along to get along because that's how you advance in Washington. So I thought he did a great job because he was dealing with something very, very important. I think he realized the obstacles and also what might happen in the future, but he made the point very clearly. I thought he handled himself very well.
Now, as I understand it, we are still going to have some sort of USA Freedom Act, right? It'll be somewhat diminished from what it is now.
Well, that's what they're telling you, and that's why a lot of people are voting for the Reform Act. But actually, it's making things worse, because the first thing is it's making government a partner with big business, you know, Verizon and AT&T, so they're doing the government's work. I don't like that. I don't like the mixture. But the other thing that is very, very bad is that they're canceling, or they're working toward the court ruling. The court ruled that the Patriot Act, the way it's written, did not legalize this collection of data. And now what they are doing in the reform package is making sure that the law says this. When the court ruled, they didn't rule on the Fourth Amendment. They just ruled and said, well, the Patriot Act is pretty vague on that. It doesn't say that you can do this. So they're correcting that. So one thing in Washington, when they have reform of something, you cannot trust them, because reform usually means they're making things a lot worse. And also, you have to be very, very cautious about anything about a freedom report or the Patriot Act. I thought that was very unpatriotic what they were doing, but everybody, you know, after 9/11 said, oh, well, we can't vote against the Patriot Act. So I think the Reform Act is a very, very dangerous thing to go. It's not a slight improvement.
According to former senior NSA official and master codemaker William Binney, the NSA continues to have the same unbridled power to surveil U.S. citizens, including Donald Trump, now President of the United States. Let's go to clip number 9 and listen to what Mr. Binney has to say about current ongoing NSA surveillance. Clip number 9.
Top story tonight. That bombshell report from the House Intelligence Committee chairman saying surveillance was collected about the Trump transition team after President Trump had been elected. My first guest tonight says the intelligence community needs to confess what they're really up to, and they are apparently up to quite a lot. Joining me tonight, an architect of the NSA surveillance program, former NSA senior intelligence officer, also whistleblower William Binney. Well, good to have you with us. I've got to get your reaction to what is, without question, a blockbuster development with Chairman Nunes revealing that he's looked at apparently dozens of reports showing surveillance of the Trump transition team after the president had been elected.
Well, I mean, it even goes long before the president was elected. Right. This is all part of the upstream collection of NSA that fundamentally is after everything. And under Executive Order 13133, Section 23C, they interpret that with their secret interpretation as allowing them to collect everything on the fiber network inside the United States. Because surely they're going to somewhere in there, there's a terrorist or a drug dealer or something like that. And we're really after that, but we'll collect everything and then we'll store it. And we have the ability under the authorization of that executive order to mine it and manipulate it and do anything we want to. So fundamentally, it's collecting everything on everybody in the country.
Well, Devin Nunes, using the expression incidental here, but you know, an incidental, as we know in intelligence terms, means either peripheral or secondary, but nonetheless, it's every bit as real and every bit as much an affront to the integrity of the privacy of the president-elect himself, it appears, as well as a sizable number of his transition team. This is really raw stuff here to be looking at the prospect that the NSA or any other agency would have the temerity to do this.
Well, that's why Senator Schumer had warned the president not to go after the intelligence community, because he said they had many ways of getting back at him. Well, this is one of them, because it's like they're J. Edgar Hoover on super steroids. They've got all this data on everybody, and if there's anything in there that can make embarrass them or make them look bad, they can use that. And that's what they call incidental collection. It's everything they're collecting except the truly bad guys.
Well, bad guys. Let's talk about bad guys for a moment. I want you, as well as our audience tonight, to listen as James Comey himself denied just 3 days ago that they had been surveilling the President of the United States and the Trump team.
With respect to the President's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets. The same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
And yet here we are, less than 72 hours later, and the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee bringing forth these reports that show that the Trump transition team, and indeed, perhaps, but not certainly, the president-elect himself at that point, being surveilled.
Well, I would point out that both Admiral Rogers and Director Comey all knew about this Stellar Wind program, the domestic collection program run it by NSA, which is capturing everything. He's known about that since the hospital visit to Ashcroft back in 2004. So, I mean, this is nothing new to them. They know about this. You should ask them, how do you define incidental collection? It's everything that they're collecting except the bad guys.
Yeah,
but that means they're still collecting everything. And then the Fairview program is the main program they use for that, but they have other ones too. So.
And the unmasking of the U.S. citizens in this, the acknowledgement that, the confession that. U.S. citizens were unmasked across a broad plane of agencies and intelligence personnel. This is really nasty stuff, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's a direct violation of the First, Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments to the Constitution, as well as any other law, any other number of laws that we've had, the pen register laws, electronic privacy, electronic security. All of those laws are being violated, all the regulations covering the FCC and all of that. And by the way, the number they gave about 20 people only able to unmask it, that's false.
I believe
that's
that
only the people who they authorized to do it.
Right.
There are probably up to 2,000 people who can access the unmasked data.
Yeah.
That includes service, the managers
one had
of the
network.
Feeling. Yeah.
One had the feeling
and also computer programmers.
One had the feeling that Admiral Rogers was being within the, you know, within the painted lines on that. But the intelligence community, you're looking at 17 agencies. Good Lord, we have no idea how many people were doing that. Nor do we have yet even a clear instinct, some at least insight because of what was released to the intelligence committee chairman. Yeah. That the president's either instincts or his information on whether or not he and the rest of his team were being surveilled was pretty good. William Binney, as always, good to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Now, in addition, there's a new Cybersecurity Act of 2015 that provides even more authority for the NSA to engage in surveillance of U.S. Congress. This is after the Freedom Reform Act of NSA. Let's go in and look at an article that talks about the NSA's new powers of surveillance under the Cybersecurity Act. Stand by and let's bring that up. Here we go. Intercept newspaper, written by Jenna McLaughlin, December 18th, 2015. In the wake of a series of humiliating cyber attacks, the imperative in Congress and the White House is to do something, anything, in the name of improving cybersecurity, and that was powerful. But only the most cynical observers thought the results would be this bad. The legislation the House passed on Friday morning is a thinly disguised surveillance bill that would give companies pathways they don't need to share user data related to cyber threats and with the government, while allowing the government to use that information for any purpose with almost no privacy protections. Because Speaker of the House Paul Ryan slipped the provision into the massive government omnibus spending bill that had to pass, or else the entire government would have to shut down, it was doomed to become law. The text of the bill, now known as the Cybersecurity Act of 2015, formerly the CISA, wasn't released until shortly after midnight Wednesday morning, giving members of Congress essentially no time to do anything about it. Sound familiar? Sounds like the Patriot Act. The bill removes a restriction on direct information sharing with the National Security Agency and the Pentagon. It eliminates a restriction on the government's use of that information for surveillance activities, allows law enforcement to use the information to prosecute any and all crimes, and leaves it up to the individual agencies to scrub personally identifying information when they feel like it. This is the U.S. government spying on U.S. citizens and then taking that information and turning it over to law enforcement. That is a constitutional violation. Quote, if someone hacks a health insurance company like Blue Cross Blue Shield and they get scared and hand over all the medical records that were exposed in the hack, the NSA could share those records with the DEA, who could use them in ongoing investigations that have nothing to do with cybersecurity or terrorism. written by Evan Greer, campaign director for the Fight for the Future, a digital rights advocacy group. So we can see by these last articles and interviews that the NSA continues to surveil Americans despite reforms. Once again, a significant and serious constitutional crisis. But I must, as I've said before, I must remind everyone, this is what the shadow government does. It moves like a shell game. It retains its power. It comes out and acts, issues bills that it calls reform, and in reality, they're not reform at all. They actually wind up expanding its power. That is what the shadow government does. So, in summary, this is how a hostile administration could use existing FISA and NSA surveillance to conduct surveillance on any political adversary. Doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican. This system, this massive system of surveillance, is there for anyone to use, even if they want to use it for nefarious purposes. All they have to do is pick a foreign target, like a Russian, and request a FISA warrant for NSA surveillance of that target. Then they search for targets communicating with that foreign target that are U.S. citizens and which they may want to surveil for illegal purposes, essentially. But we've seen that in government surveillance, legality is not necessarily at the top of the list. Using the FISA warrant, they can eavesdrop on conversations with that foreign agent, but also collect large swaths of what they call incidental communications on U.S. citizens. That incidental information is supposed to be blacked out by a small group in the NSA. The names of all U.S. citizens are supposed to be blacked out or masked by a small group in the NSA. That is not always done. A lot of this surveillance information is disseminated now after Obama's order to 16 other federal intelligence agencies before these citizens' communications are even masked. Hence, that may be the source of some of the leaks to the press that we've seen. So, using the National Security Advisor's huge power and authority, the National Security Advisor, which appears possibly to be the case with Susan Rice, can unmask the names of these U.S. citizens being targeted. He or she can order the NSA to turn over those surveillance records and unmask the names of the U.S. citizens involved in the NSA's surveillance. And that's how this could go bad, to target and surveil a U.S. citizen. We will see as the investigation goes on if this is indeed what happened. As more information emerges, we'll find out the full truth, at least we hope to. This would indeed, without question, be a constitutional crisis. Well, I want to thank you all for listening. We will continue to peel back the layers of this onion in future shows. I want to announce today that on our next show, we'll have Admiral James Lyons on as a special guest. Admiral Lyons and I will be discussing the Navy, Department of the Navy's framing of Admiral Husband Kimmel and General Walter Short for the attack on Pearl Harbor, based on a kangaroo court proceeding to cover the Navy's negligence that actually led to the attack itself. It turns out that the Navy had pre-information or intelligence that the attack was very well going to take place. To cover the real events that led to Pearl Harbor, even FDR himself happily supported the Navy's actions and destroyed the careers of two distinguished officers. Intercepts that the Navy had and FDR was aware of that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor were withheld from Admiral Kimmel, and he never saw them. This was a classic case of the U.S. government, the executive branch, and the Department of the Navy concealing intelligence of an impending attack on U.S. forces from the admiral in charge, then framing that admiral as being responsible for the attack itself and the deaths of U.S. servicemen. Admiral Kimmel has since been exonerated of all these accusations in an official Navy report, but the Navy refuses to release that report, despite multiple requests by his family pleading for that report to be released to clear Admiral Kimmel's name. That is astounding, but that is how this secret part of government works, to conceal its activity, its negligence, and sometimes things that it has known in advance. That's going to be a great program. Admiral Lyons is a true patriot, an outstanding man. He writes tremendous articles for the Washington Times. He is a phenomenally courageous constitutionalist and patriot, and of course he was the the commanding admiral for the Pacific Fleet. So we're really looking for that, forward to that broadcast. So join us next week as we expose this cover-up and begin what we hope will be a public outcry for the release of the report exonerating Admiral Kimmel. And I'll be making a request to all of our listeners to join in that fight, demanding that the Navy release this report, starting a public outcry and a public movement. Admiral Kimmel has passed away. He went to his deathbed trying to clear his name. On that program, I hope Admiral Lyons and I can start a movement to force the Navy to release that report that exonerates him, at least for the sake of his family. So this is Kevin Shipp, your host for the Intelligence Hour, signing off, and we'll see you next week.